AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Grain trade started with some promise, but prices are lower now. And despite a big rally in equities, the cattle complex is under pressure. At least hogs are trying to push to the upside. And late Friday night, the House passed the COVID stimulus package. We'll find out this morning what's waiting for it in the Senate.
Live from the March Towards Spring via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Senator Chuck Grassley, then we implement a conversation with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson, and right after the news, Kirk Hinz from BAMWX, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you so much. Yes, March 1, it kind of, when you look at the calendar, it kind of looks like spring. When you look at the thermometer, it kind of looks like spring, but the problem is, stuck here in the timber, looking outside the bunker, there is still a lot of snow on the ground, dude.
You're regretting that shade now, aren't you? You're regretting it.
Yeah. I tell you. How you doing? How was the weekend?
Super, super terrific. Had a great weekend. Lots of rest. There were periods of napping. A little bit of overindulgence in, you know, some delicious foods to eat. And, you know, I'm chalking it up as a victory this weekend. How about you?
Excellent. Had a little family time this weekend. Had a little fish fry after doing some fishing. That was great. That was spectacular.
Sounds like that was a success. Yeah.
It was. It was. Absolutely. So we really, really enjoyed the time that we had together. No question about that.
Now, did you at any point need to deploy your safety pants?
I did not.
Okay.
Still about the lake that I was fishing on still had about 20 inches of ice. We drove right out there to where we were going to fish.
All right. So, careful driving out there. I don't want to see you wind up on some TikTok video somewhere. Probably go viral.
I know. And as soon as that's the lesson that we have learned from all of that is if disaster is pending and imminent, you had better start rolling video.
At least get something out of the deal.
That's right. That's right. I love it. Okay. If it is meteorological, spring starting today. Yes. I wondered if it is meteorological fall that is starting in South America.
Ooh, good question.
I think it is. We'll find out from Kirk here in just a little bit. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, you mentioned this on Friday, and I put you on the spot. I apologize for that. Price discovery for spring crop insurance prices did end on Friday. Prices are projected at the following per bushel levels. Corn at $4.58. Compare that to $3.88 last year. Soybeans $11.87 compares to $9.17 last year, and spring wheat at $6.53 compares to $4.35 last year. Chip, this marks the highest corn price level since 2014, highest bean price since 2013. Note, Midwest producers, the deadline for purchasing crop insurance for most of y'all, March 15, coming right up.
Yep, and the way that the markets are trading right now, those insurance prices are already acting as a put option in the market. Well, except that you don't have the insurance purchased yet. But once you do get it purchased, if prices are where they're at right now, because Novi beans are above that $11.87 and Dease corn is above that $4.58, so that's your put option levels.
The House cleared the $1.9 trillion COVID stimulus package on Saturday. The measure now moves to the Senate, where it is expected to face some hurdles. Senate Democrats spent the weekend plotting ways to salvage the minimum wage provision, which would gradually increase the minimum wage to $15 per hour by 2025. Democrats have been drafting alternative plans that could qualify under Senate rules and achieve similar goals, but have shelved the attempt after it became clear over the weekend that getting all 50 Senate Democrats to agree on specific language would risk missing the March 14 deadline for extending expiring supplemental unemployment benefits.
Yeah.
Chip?
Salvage. Salvage is an interesting word to put on that minimum wage provision. I'm sure that that's how the Democrats are looking at that. We'll find out from Senator Grassley here in just a little bit what he thinks about that minimum wage provision.
The Biden administration is expected to release the president's trade agenda report today, the first chance to see some potential trade thinking from the new administration. While the report largely looks back at developments of the past year, there is typically a portion of that report which is more forward-looking. Attention will be on whether the issue of Trade Promotion Authority or TPA renewal comes up as the current version expires in July. Chip?
Yeah, actually, I don't have a whole lot to add to that one. That one's pretty straightforward there, Davis.
Yep. Sure. Well, Delta and American Airlines reportedly announced separate agreements with Deloitte to buy sustainable aviation fuel. Delta said it would buy low-emission fuel that is made primarily from renewable waste and residue materials for its aircraft, with the fuel to be dropped into its existing infrastructure and mixed with conventional airline fuel. The airline said it would result in a reduction of about 1,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide. Biofuel proponents seem pretty happy with this,
sure.
Chip.
Absolutely. We've talked about that this is one of the ways to prove the value is when these big consumers of fuel start promoting the fact that they're using the renewables for the environmental benefits.
China is set to launch an online carbon emissions trading system this quarter, speeding up efforts to curb pollution and help attain its carbon neutral goal by 2060. And I got to hit this: tight supplies and expectations for Chinese producers to reduce soybean plantings in favor of corn propelled the count's soybean futures on the Dalian Commodity Exchange to a record high to start the week. Rising edible oil prices also provided support, as did expectations for delayed arrivals of soybean imports due to Brazil's harvest delays. Chip, why would Brazil's harvest be delayed? If only someone could clarify this for us.
If only someone could tell us. Let's bring in Kirk Hintz from BAMWX.com. Kirk, how are you this morning?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
I'm doing real good. Where are those harvest delays centered, Kirk?
Yeah, so the rain has really been focused across what really the main soybean areas. You got like Mato Grosso, Goiás, all the way down to like Rio de Janeiro, northern Mato Grosso, so really the heart of the soybean areas have been just swamped with a lot of rain over the last 2 to 3 weeks. So in the main areas would be where those delays would be occurring.
Okay. What's the forecast? Do these rains continue?
Yeah, I do have them forecasting to continue at least the next 2 weeks. Same areas, same amounts of rain, same lack of rain in southern Brazil, Uruguay, major Argentinian croplands. Really, this is a pattern that just is not budging. It hasn't budged the last 3 to 4 weeks. I don't expect it to budge the next 2 weeks to 3 weeks. The difference is now the heat is really turning up for especially Argentina. We have temperatures that are, 8 degrees plus above normal. That's well into the 90s for this time of the year, and now substantially dry, where before we were cool and dry, now we're going to be hot and dry. So things probably going to get more worse more quickly down there versus what they have been in February.
Well, it's kind of you kind of described the worst case scenario to the end of their season.
Yeah, it really is. Not to be too bullish on it, but there is no rain in the forecast. I don't have rain in the forecast, and it's getting a lot warmer, so it's not a good situation down there.
That's crazy. Hey, you've got a big webinar coming up on March 10, right?
Yes. Yes, next Wednesday, 11 o'clock Eastern Time. Folks can register weatherporthole, PORTHOLE.com/webinar. It's going to be a planting season webinar for spring. We're going to give a lot of summer insight there as well. So just need like first, last name, email address, and we'll get you guys on board with that. We're excited to get another season ahead of us.
Excellent. Give that website address again.
Yep, weatherporthole.com/webinar.
Got it. Thank you, Perfect. Kirk. We appreciate you, buddy.
Awesome. Appreciate you guys. You guys have a great week.
You too. That's Kirk Hintz, BAMWX.com. Coming up next, we've got Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa right here on AgriTalk. The 2020 harvest is long over, but managing resistant weeds remains key as we move into 2021. Steve Gumm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here today. Steve, how does a lack of weed seed bank management impact a grower's potential yield?
So essentially, deposits are made to the bank from the reserve of weed seeds developed from unmanaged infestations or weed escapes. And once those deposits are made into the ground, seeds can grow and mature into more weeds, creating a cycle that can be really hard to stop. As this happens, fields are at a higher risk for resistance to develop, and herbicide applications become less effective year over year.
Yeah, so you mentioned to me that you have four key ways that growers can keep their weed seed bank accounts low. What are those?
Sure thing. There are four key actions that we always talk about to help growers minimize risks of the weed seed bank building in their fields. These include using full labeled rates of herbicides that optimize coverage and control, apply herbicides before the largest weed in the field reaches 4 inches in height, scout fields for problem areas and identify those weeds. Clean equipment between fields is really important, especially at harvest, to prevent seeds from spreading. It's also important to keep in mind that new herbicide technology should not be treated as a silver bullet for resistant weed management. Instead, new herbicides should be used as an additional tool in an integrated, comprehensive weed management program.
Wow, that is excellent perspective right there. Steve, what's your recommended herbicide that offers the best comprehensive program in corn?
In corn, Acuron herbicide will help fields start clean and protect them from weeds prior to emergence, so you can control weeds now and in the future as a premium resistance management solution. With four active ingredients and three effective sites of action, Acuron is the best herbicide solution for control of resistant weed biotypes with built-in weed resistance management. Remember, Acuron also provides growers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre when applied pre-emergence at a full label rate, in addition to helping prevent increasing that weed seed bank.
Got to keep that weed seed bank low. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with me, and we are going to launch right into this conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Senator, welcome back to AgriTalk. Thank you again for making time for us.
You don't have to thank me for making time for you, because I get paid for doing this. And one of the most fruitful things to talk about as a senator is the importance of agriculture. You know, 2% of the people feed the other 98%. That makes that 2% pretty important.
You bet. You bet. That's a great way to put it, sir. Okay. The stimulus package that the House passed over the weekend, how much of it is really aimed at helping in the economic recovery from the issues that are related to the pandemic, Senator?
Well, I don't know whether it's one-third that's not or two-thirds that's not, but out of $1.9 trillion, a third or two-thirds is a heck of a lot of money if it's being spent that it isn't related to the pandemic. So let me back up then and say what I think is legitimate. Yeah, we got to provide for the vaccines. We got to provide for testing. We've got to provide for helping people that are shut out of jobs because the government shut down the small businesses. There's people that are hurting because unemployment ran out, things of that nature. But bridge between New York and Canada, or a tunnel for mass transit in California, is strictly pork, unrelated to it. Or we need to help K through 12 education because of increased costs, because of we want our schools opened up, and the pandemic is a problem there. So we still got tens of billions of dollars that were appropriated before Christmas that aren't even out of Washington, D.C. yet. And this bill has another $135 billion in it. Some of it won't be spent until the year 2028. So what does that have to do with the pandemic? So we ought to be working with the things that are needed and not do a bunch of other stuff just because it's convenient and you might have the votes for it.
Right, right. You know, Senator, I am not willing to say that the bridge, the Schumer Bridge, is unnecessary. I'm not willing to say that the subway system in Pelosi's district isn't necessary. But I would sure like to see those issues debated on their own merits, right?
Yeah, in the annual appropriation bill. Or we're going to have an infrastructure bill up later this year. Do it then. But you shouldn't use the virus as an excuse to get things done just because you can get it done.
How are they getting away with it, with jamming all of these issues into this bill?
Okay. Well, first of all, it's pretty simple. In the House of Representatives, you get away with it because if you keep the majority together, and that's exactly what Pelosi did, she only lost two Democrats, to keep the majority together to get 218 votes, she got 219 votes, so you can ignore the minority. Now, in the United States Senate, normally you couldn't ignore the minority if you have to have 60 votes. But in this particular instance, they're using a process called reconciliation, which is used about once every three or four years to get something done in a partisan way, and or in a bipartisan way sometimes. And if all 50 Democrats stick together, plus Kamala Harris breaking tie, then they can do it. Our only hope in the United States Senate is two senators that are Democrats by the name of Manchin and Sinema. They said that there's some things that are in this bill they don't like. They might get it cut back a little bit, but we're still talking about maybe $1.7 trillion and not having the minimum wage $15 put in it. But except for that, there's not much hope of doing anything less, and they'll get it done by March the 14th, and the president's obviously going to sign it.
Yeah. So, in other words, if the senator's Manchin in particular doesn't like the minimum wage side, he can strip that? Is that what I'm hearing you say? Or it just comes out of
no
rules play? Okay.
No, that's what you're hearing me say,
Okay. Okay. Very, very good. One of the more sensitive items that I think is in the House Ag Committee portion of the bill, the emergency relief for farmers of color, $5 billion for loan forgiveness plus 20%. Is that going to have support in the Senate?
I, based upon just what I described to you, if 50 Democrats stick together, the answer is yes. And I haven't heard enough discussion of that. But this is how I look at it. There may be some people that need that sort of help. But it isn't just if you're a black American farmer, a Native American farmer, a Hispanic American farmer. It's if you're a farmer. It wouldn't matter what the color of your skin is, if you're white or purple. If certain people ought to be helped, you ought to be helped regardless of your ethnicity or your color.
Yep. Okay. Well put. We've seen a run up in gas prices. We've seen some ethanol demand. I want to say that it's starting to come back into the market. Does the biofuels industry still need some aid from Congress?
Well, the first actions that the Biden administration has taken has been pretty positive towards ethanol. It's the only thing they've done so far, and they could do a lot of harm before it's over. But right now, they have taken a position different than the Trump EPA. When the Trump EPA defended giving small refinery waivers, and the Trump administration lost in the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals, that's being appealed to the Supreme Court. So what the Trump administration did that is helpful to ethanol is that before the Supreme Court, they're taking the position finally that the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals was right, and they're going to ask the court to affirm the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals, which said that a lot of the waivers that have been given in the past were illegally given.
Right, right, absolutely. Should ethanol producers in particular be looking at some support coming their way?
Well, the only thing that I've had so far along that line is that I can speak with certainty is it seems like the director of EPA, Mr. Regan, who had the same position in North Carolina and who is backed by the American Farm Bureau Federation and by the Corn and Soybean Associations, at least their leadership, that speaks that he's friendly to agriculture.
Right.
And it also speaks, he answered questions along my line that I found him very open to helping ethanol.
Good, good. Okay. CFAP 3, the $13 billion that you mentioned was approved before Christmas. What's the status? Now that we've got Vilsack is in at USDA, is it time to free that money up?
Well, I would say so, but it's kind of caught up in something that's affecting a lot of different programs in many different departments, and it's something that Trump did, Biden did it, probably every president in the recent 40 or 50 years has done it. They get into office, and they just want to hold everything up for 60 days to review it, to see if they agree with it, and I wouldn't find any reason that this administration would disagree with what we're trying to help agriculture, but until that 60 days is up, I can't give you a very definitive answer.
Okay. All right. Did you get a chance to watch any of the Conservative Political Action Conference over the weekend?
Yes, bits and pieces of it, and about half of what the president said. And I agree with most of what was said. But here's something that you want to make sure as a conservative you don't get mixed up with. You just don't want to listen to, 20% of the people or even if it's 40% of the people that consider themselves conservative, that 40% doesn't make a majority, and we've got to do what we can to bring other people into the tent. And so I can feel good about things that were said there. But that's a building process, and we got to build to take over control of the Congress in 2022 and win back the presidency in 2024. And that's going to take a lot of hard work beyond just the speeches that were given in Orlando.
That's exactly right, sir. Thank you so much again, Senator Grassley. We really appreciate you.
God bless you. Goodbye.
All right. That is Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Coming up next, time to get an update on what's going on in the used machinery markets. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, here on AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, it's March 1, and this bean trade decided to get on a seesaw and go for a little ride here this morning. What's going on?
Yeah, it's been a heck of a ride. We had sharp gains overnight and carried through to the start of the daytime session. Then we went negative on the day, and now we're back to the upside and trying to build some gains here mid-morning. So quite the movement so far. South American weather, the rains obviously persisting in that central northern area of Brazil. Sounds like southern Brazil will get some rainfall that's needed here. Argentina got some rains over the weekend that were unexpected, but they weren't real widespread, and it's trending drier and hotter over the next 2 weeks there. So all kinds of weather stuff going on and trying to sort through demand and everything else. Weekly export inspections were strong across the board pretty good. Much for corn, beans, and wheat.
Good, very good. All right, over onto the livestock trade. Finally seeing some plus signs in cattle. I kind of expected with what the equities are doing that we would see some more strength in cattle today.
Well, we had followed through selling early on, and last week was quite the bearish week from a technical perspective, and just didn't end well, and then had that follow through this morning. But we're trying to bounce back here mid-morning, so we'll see how it all finishes up. But, you know, it's going to be a battle of futures versus the cash market, I think, there as the week goes on. Hog market continues to charge to the upside, so moderate to strong gains in most of those contracts here mid-morning. You know, we'll see. Watch the cash and product markets, I guess, against the real big run-up in the futures.
Gotcha. Yep. South American weather, that seems to be the thing to watch. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix. Cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? CalfPerk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing and nursing. Get CalfPerk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
So that bump there, that's got to be because Nick and his brother were on Saturday Night Live this weekend, right?
It's got to be. I guess. I don't know. I don't watch Saturday Night Live. Did you catch it?
It wasn't a Hanson. It was the Jonas. I was trying to make a joke there that it was Nick Hanson.
Ah, the Jonas Brothers. Is there a Nick Hanson?
I don't know.
You know what?
I don't know. I
think that's Harold's boy. And he, now last I knew, he had joined the service and was stationed in Germany, I believe. Nuremberg, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't recall.
Maybe, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't recall either. Let's move on.
Yeah.
That was poorly executed on my part.
You're fine.
All right.
You're aces, baby.
Welcome back. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. Let's jump into the conversation right now with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. How you doing, Greg?
Hey, I'm doing pretty well, guys. And I got to say, the only handsome brothers I know play hockey from the Slapshot movie. That's all I can contribute.
All right. Yes.
Excellent.
Order is restored. Well, order is restored to the handsome conversation.
Done.
Thank you, Greg.
Yep. All right, man, let's get into it. What you got for the pick of the week?
Pick of the week, we're going Red Equipment out to Missouri last Thursday, guys. Really nice farm retirement auction. I think it was for Don and Carol McEnany by my friends at Younger Auction Company. And this auction had one tractor and a combine, I think, that pretty much, you know, provide a good little paint the picture on what's happening in the used market. So the tractor was a 2015 KSH Magnum 310 CVT, low hours, only 679, and it sold for $207,000. So it's at one level, it's like I look and it's like, yep, that's a record price. But what I found so interesting is the previous high was exactly 1 year ago. It was actually on Leap Day, February 29th of 2020, in West Central Iowa, exact same number of hours, 679 hours. But it was an 18 model, and it brought 182. So Thursday in Missouri, 3 years older, same hours, a year down the road, went for 25K more. So basically is what we're seeing. And the combine on the sale, beautiful 2017 KSH 5140, 616 engine hours, went for 189.5. That's a record highest I've ever seen, but not by 3 or 4,000. By 34,500.
Ooh.
Previous high was 165 for another 17 model a year ago with less hours on it, 550 hours. So,
but Greg, with the trends that we've been talking about, when you said the 189.5, I thought, huh? Well, that's not that bad.
Well, again, when we compare to new,
yeah.
I mean, another example, I didn't put it in the notes I sent along before I hopped on here, Chip, but there was a sale Tuesday. Sullivan Auctioneers had a big dealer auction for Ag Pro Companies, a big John Deere dealer. And on Tuesday, they had a 17 model John Deere 9620RX. I think it had like 1,255 hours on it that brought 390. So that's a four-year-old tractor pushing 1,300 hours at 390. But again, what's doing that is the price of new just keeps yanking up on the used values here.
Yep. All right. I gotcha. Let's get off of tractors for just a little bit, because your report here on the collector car vehicle auction, that picture caught my eye, man.
Yeah, I thought, hey, still time for you to bid, Chip. It's our friends again at Sullivan's, their two-day online collect your car auction, Carthage, Illinois, today and tomorrow. I think a lot of these cars are closing around noon or 1 o'clock today, and the one that's got people chattering, which I sent a picture to you of, was the 59 Chevy Impala convertible Crown Sapphire Blue. It's got, I think, 79,999 miles on it. When I sent a note to you, Chip, I said it was up to 116. Now it's up to 138,000 bucks. So I think that closes about 1. The other one that's got my eye on that sale, I love El Caminos. I don't know why, but I just kind of do.
No, you've got an El Camino vibe to you, Greg, just so you know.
I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but anyway,
it is. Absolutely it is.
I gotcha. To my way of thinking, it's sort of like the very first hybrid, but instead of building it up, they just put a crater in the back. So anyway, but a 1959 red El Camino is up to 36.5 now. And folks, if you want to just forget about your troubles of the day, just go look at the cars on this auction today and tomorrow, and they will just make you smile because it's just a time machine. There's so many muscle cars, and it's just great stuff.
What about pickups? Outside of the El Camino, of course.
I got kind of stuck. I was kind of traveling this weekend, but I looked at today's list. I didn't see many pickups. I don't know. They usually do have Blazers and pickups restored and original. So, again, it's a two-day sale today and tomorrow.
Okay.
You can check it out at SullivanAuctioneers.com. There's something for everybody, I think.
All right. Well, Ritchie Brothers has got one coming up Wednesday, Thursday, too, right?
Oh, my gosh. You aren't kidding. And if you're looking for a pickup, I mean, I fell out of my chair when I looked at this. But it's a two-day event, Wednesday, Thursday, like you say, online sale. No buyer's fee for Ritchie Brothers. But they're pulling equipment from their Colorado, Utah, and North Dakota areas up by Williston. And I looked the first day, I think there's 61 Ford F-350s. 50 from Colorado, 11 from Utah. I think there's 34 F-250s and almost 20 F-150s.
Oh, my goodness.
So tons of heavy equipment. If you're looking for that type of stuff, or, again, pickups, semis, just incredible. Just check out rbauction.com. You got tons of sales coming up. But, again, this one is Wednesday and Thursday, Denver, Salt Lake, and Williston, North Dakota. I think there's over 4,100 lots on the event.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. That's going to be a lot to get through there. And
I don't know if you have any El Caminos, but anyway.
But the season is definitely heating up. There's no question about it, isn't it? You've got another one that you want to highlight in Wisconsin that's coming on Thursday.
Yeah, my friends Miller & Company Auctions and Appraisals having a really great sale. Check this one out, folks. It's for Hartman Farm, a dairy farm there that goes back to 1855 in Newton, Wisconsin. And really, really nice equipment. Tractors, they got a John Deere 6115M two-wheel drive under 600 hours. Case IH 125 Maxim two-wheel drive with under 1600 hours. Case IH JX95 front wheel assist 2400 hours. And I tell you what, some beautiful hay and forage equipment. They got a Kuhn VB316 round baler that I think it actually is new. I don't even know if it has any bales through it. And then they have a Massey 7515 forage blower that's only filled two silos. So beautiful equipment on this sale. Again, it's Miller & Company Auctions and Appraisals Thursday, March 4th in Newton, Wisconsin.
Okay. All right. Take us over to Northeast Iowa, Strawberry Point.
Yep, same day, Thursday, March 4th. Like you said, Chip, auction season's flying. Our friends at the Strawberry Point, they're everettractors.com. Check it out. They got their big consignment sale with a number of farm equipment retirement lines within it. Just a couple things that caught my eye. They got a John Deere 4555 two-wheel drive, 5,800 hours, a 15-model John Deere 6125M with loader, 2,000 hours. If you like white tractors, got a 92 white 145 mechanical front, 4,400 hours. A couple of Magnums, a 315 and a 245. both with low hours. So again, EverettTractors.com, Thursday, Joel's Tractor and Auction, big sale there. So it should be a good one.
So the consignment world, Greg, do you notice any, you know, is there any price difference going on at the consignment sales now versus a farmer selling out his whole fleet of equipment?
I guess what I'd say there, Chip, is it still depends a little bit on the history of the auction company and sort of how they approach their consignments. Now, Thursday there in Strawberry Point, you know, I don't think
they've been doing it forever.
Right. And people have a good handle on it and working more of the retirement lines in with the, you know, consignment sales. You know, the place we still see, you know, the price differences are the sales where people are less sure about, you know, is it protected and that type of thing. And that just, you know, it's part of the game, no doubt, the piece of the market. But anytime there's question marks, it tends to make buyers just pull back just a little bit. Not saying you can't, you know, bid up to it. And if they have a high reserve, well, that's, you took a shot. But again, people just tend not to like that as much. So
Right. Well, I can tell you this, the lot there in Strawberry Point, I didn't go by it this weekend, went by it two weekends ago, and it's chock full. I mean,
it's quite a sale, Bill. I looked at it this morning. I think there's online bidding too. So they bring in lots of buyers on that one. That'll be a big event.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, what's coming up on social media?
Well, social media, we got lots of upcoming sales. I did want to maybe highlight there's a sale March 9th, folks, in Dexter, Minnesota. I just posted a YouTube video on it the other day. It's got a John Deere 4255 two-wheel drive with only 456 actual hours on it. And I interviewed Andrew Hamilton about it. So check it out on YouTube. It's going to be a hot one, I think.
Awesome. Good work, Greg. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, sounds good, guys.
Yeah. All right. That's Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Davis and I will be back to wrap things up in a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer. For a strong start, trust the tried and true protection of Corvus and harness extra herbicides from Bayer.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Hey, before we restart the conversation, let's make time for this industry spotlight. Joining us now, Ken Ripley. He is the Assistant Vice President for FMH. He's the Regional Sales Manager for the Northwest. Ken, tell us about FMH.
Yeah, so Farmers Mutual, we've been around since 1893. You know, we're definitely a complete farm insurance solution company based in the U.S., and because we're a mutual, we're owned by the American farmers. And our tagline is, we're proud to be America's crop insurance company.
Excellent. Yeah, you've got a deadline on crop insurance coming right up, right?
Yeah, March 15th is going to catch most of the nation for their spring crop insurance decisions. Lots of new things this year. One of them is the new product from the RMA called ECO, or Enhanced Coverage Option, giving producers that opportunity to get up to 95% of their multi-peril APH in coverage. So if farmers haven't heard about it yet, it's getting to be a pretty popular product and something they should definitely be talking to their agents about.
Boy, ECO up to 95%. It's going to come at an added cost, right?
Yes. Definitely, it's not a cheap option, but the good news is it's giving them subsidy on that top end as well. And
right.
Stretching their dollar even more for getting coverage on these spring prices that are back at levels we haven't seen in quite some time.
Talk about the precision solutions.
Yeah, so at FMH, we're really proud to be the leader in the precision side. I'm a farmer up in Minnesota, and tracking data that's required for crop insurance, like acreage and production reporting, is always a time-consuming task. We've got connections with companies like Climate Field View and John Deere's My Operations Center. We make that process a lot easier for producers, so we can grab their data from those systems directly into ours to make their reporting needs to their agents that much simpler. So, like I say, we lead the industry in this avenue, and we'd sure like to talk to any grower that wants to learn more about that type of functionality.
Excellent, Ken. Hey, where do we go for more information?
The best way to reach Farmers Mutual is look on our website at fmh.com.
All right. Thank you, Ken. That's Ken Ripley, Assistant Vice President at FMH. Davis,
yes.
Going back to the conversation that we had with Senator Grassley, he was worked up about a couple of things, I felt, when we talk about what is in the COVID stimulus package. It's on the Republicans' list of talking points when it comes to the COVID-19 package. It's the 1.5 million, not billion, but million that is set aside for a bridge connecting New York and Canada. My only question is that for the engineering study of a bridge connecting New York to Canada, 1.5 million? That's not going to build much of a bridge, I don't think.
Right.
$140 million for a subway from San Francisco to Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bigger chunk of change. I don't know if it's enough to cover the total bill, but it's a bigger chunk of change. There's no question about that. I don't know. Maybe I've been conditioned by the T word, you know, by trillion.
Sure, sure. Well, heck, I've got a bridge I could sell you if.
Sure.
What's sure. interesting about that is that, you know, sometimes you sort of hear about this generic term. Well, there's too much pork in this or that bill. Or, there's so much pork in there, I can't sign this. Dude didn't just break it down and just dismiss the ideas, but he talked about, you know, where these discussions belong. If we're going to have a COVID relief package, I tend to agree that, you know, show me how this impacts the COVID situation.
Exactly.
Right? Am I off base on that? That seemed the way that he was thinking about it anyway.
Well, yeah. And I mean, when he talked about the help for schools to get them up and running.
Right.
You know, I think about schools in Iowa that are up and running for the most part. I know that there are some that different school districts are handling it different ways. But for the most part, it's in-person learning that is happening. And you see some of the kids that are getting word that starting on March 3rd, my wife usually has the a network morning news show on before she leaves for work. And she had it on this morning. I looked at it, and there was this little girl that was just broken out in tears.
Oh,
because
no.
She got word that she's going to get to go back to school.
Oh.
And they were tears of joy.
Oh, I got you.
That's the kind of stress that we are putting on these young people. Very young people. It's unfortunate.
We're asking an awful lot of some of these kids to stay at home and to discipline their little young minds to, and of course, parents help out in this, but, you know, to move the platform from raising your hand and asking the teacher a question to now you got to type your question in the chat window. To me, that feels like there's a tremendous disconnect there that does a majority of students a great disservice.
Right, right. Senator Ernst has a press release out this morning. Congress isn't even waiting to lift the decade-long moratorium on earmarking before starting to pig out. she's talking about the earmarks that are all over this COVID relief bill, like the 1.5 million for the bridge, like the 140 million for the subway. And it's like I said to Senator Grassley, listen, if these are worthy efforts, then debate them, then find the negotiation to put them in place. One thing about it, if you handle earmarks correctly, and remember we've talked with Congressman Graves out of Missouri about this.
Yes.
If you do earmarks correctly, then it's kind of the way that it's intended to be done if you do them correctly, because they are transparent.
Mm-hmm.
There are six opportunities to stop, six votes. On a piece of funding, okay?
Yep.
Six votes that can stop it. It needs to be introduced at a subcommittee level. We're going to talk with Congressman Thompson about this tomorrow morning on the show.
GT, yes,
because,
sir.
Yes, because he was on Signal to Noise this last week. Mm-hmm. If you haven't heard the Signal to Noise conversation with Glenn GT Thompson yet, go back and listen to it. I mean, it's a lesson in how you can make the effort transparent. I'm really looking forward to doing just kind of a thumbnail approach to that conversation on the show tomorrow morning. All right, thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon, Rich Pawson from Critical Point Podcast. Tomorrow morning, GT Thompson, Jeff Cooper from RFA, and Lance Honing from NAS. NAS right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.